Thank you very much. Good morning. As mentioned, the shiur this morning is categorized, or can be categorized, as being minyanei d'yoma. Something that applies to this time of year, not on our calendar, not on the Jewish calendar, but on the secular calendar. Today, of course, is December the 23rd, which means that tomorrow night, the eve of Gerush HaHoliy, Christmas Eve, Katzmech night, Xmas, whatever nickname you use, referred to in Hebrew generally as Nitelnacht, and in Yiddish is Nitelnacht. That's tomorrow night, that's December 24th in the evening going into December 25th. And we'll address momentarily what the term or the nickname Nitelnacht means. I remember when I was a kid, I used to hear Nitelnacht, and Nitel I thought was a Yiddish word, like a small nip or something, Nitel. That's not the case, as we'll see. But specifically, I'd like to address a practice that people have in some communities, particularly the Hasidic circles, to avoid the Talmud Torah on that night, on the December 24th at night, going to December 25th, at least until Chatzos, until midnight, perhaps, according to some, even all night long. It's a practice that's adhered to rather strictly in many, many Hasidic circles. Matter of fact, a friend of mine was telling me last week that he got married this time of year. I think he told me he got married on December 21st a few years ago, so he had Sheva Brachas, the week of Sheva Brachas. So one of the Sheva Brachas was the night of Monday night, like this year, December 24th. And so they had a regular Sheva Brachas, and there were some Hasidic guests at the Sheva Brachas. And when the Rav, whoever's there, the Darshan, got up to give the Dvar Torah, the Sheva Brachas, they walked out of the room, because also to be involved in Talmud Torah and Tisha B'Av, on Nitelnacht, and they take it very, very seriously. I mentioned Tisha B'Av by mistake. The truth is, we have no parallel, to my knowledge, anywhere in our tradition. We have a practice that you're not allowed to engage in Talmud Torah and Tisha B'Av. That's true. So Tisha B'Av night is another night when one would not involve himself in learning. Rachman Watan, if somebody's sitting Shiva, Avelus, also doesn't learn at night. However, on those occasions, there are certain Dvar HaMutarim, there are certain things that one is permitted to learn on Tisha B'Av, certain Gemaras, certain Halachas that one is allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av. Same thing if a person, again, Rachman Watan is sitting Shiva, there are certain Dinim that a person is allowed to study when observing Shiva, certain Gemaras, Maitat, and other places that will enhance the person observing the Shiva. So in that regard, Nitelnacht, the Christmas Eve, Xmas Eve, is stricter even than Tisha B'Av, and even than Rachman Atzam, somebody's in Avelus. I'd like to try to understand and explore where this practice comes from. Again, it's not that prevalent in people come from more religious background. As we'll see later, the Sardim also don't have this practice, but specifically in Hasidic circles it's observed. Certainly, there's no mention of such a thing anywhere in the classic sources that we have. There's nothing in the Mishnayos about it, nothing in the Tosefta, not in the Gemara, not in the works of the Gaonim. The Mishonim don't talk about it, it's not even in the Shulchan Aruch, not in any Medrash, any place. It certainly doesn't appear in any of our early sources. And it's actually somewhat questionable as to when the practice developed. I don't know exactly myself and some of the research and some articles that I've read about it. It seems to be unclear exactly when it's developed. But I said it's held to very strongly in certain Chassidish communities. We'll begin in the Maamar Komos. Hopefully everyone has the Yeshits. The Mishnah in the beginning of Maseches Avodah Zarah, Daf Beis Amud Aleph, the Mishnah states, Lifnei Eidein, Shalom Dekachom, Shosh Yom, Osir Losseis, the losses of Mahem, Lashilon, Lishol Mahem, Lahavolos, and Lulas Mahem, Lefor, and Lefor Mahem, and Behud Omer, and Lefor Mahem, and Meshameter Lo, and Amr Lo, and Meshameter, Asher Sameh, Lulachar Zman. The first Mishnah, Maseches Avodah Zarah, describes that within a few days of the holiday that's observed by idolaters, their festival, their holiday, a Jew is prohibited from getting involved in business activities, in borrowing and lending and selling, giving presents and so on. Not to collect money, not to charge money, not to give money and pay back and so on, because this will increase the person's simcha. The Mishnah quotes one opinion, the Yehuda says you're allowed to collect money, because most people are not overjoyed when they have to pay. However, the other opinion says, no, even to collect, because in the long run, the guy's glad he's gotten rid of his debt. What's the idea? So Rashi explains, in the second source, because he'll be so delighted that he just concluded this business deal, or he got this nice present, or he got a good loan, or whatever it is. So on his holiday, in the course of thanking his God for whatever he celebrated on that particular holiday, he's also going to thank God for this, his God. He's going to thank his God for this deal that he just conducted, or just concluded with this Jewish person. So indirectly, a Jew is doing business in such a fashion with a non-Jew is contributing to this non-Jew's simcha, to this non-Jew's celebration of his holiday. So that's the mission. That's how the first Pesukim of Avodah Zarah goes on to describe a different dinim in this regard. We're not allowed to do anything that will contribute to a goy, to a non-Jew participating in his holiday in a more simchadic, in a more joyous fashion. That's the mission. It doesn't say anything about, actually the mission does list certain holidays that were observed in those days. It has a number of interesting nicknames of different holidays, but it certainly doesn't mention, at least not openly, anything to do with what's observed in the United States and most of the world starting tomorrow night. The earliest source that I was able to come up with in terms of the reference to Nippel is in the Trumas of the Trumas Hadeshen. Trumas Hadeshen. Trumas Hadeshen, when we showed him, it's in Kuf Tzad Yehei, in the third source. Trumas Hadeshen was asked, and then some towns, the Kama Ayoros, Noeg, Mayhudim, Mashach, Doronos, Lekumrin, Lushultan, Vyom Shmini, Lenittel, Keshemizchad, Shem, Lehem, Hashana, Yesh, Hashad, Vyir, Vyidara, Olav. He was asked, apparently, in some places, the practice for the Jews, it may have been because of, Jews had to ingratiate themselves very often with their non-Jewish government leaders and so on in their towns. So he used to send gift, Vyom Shmini, Lenittel. The eighth day after Nittel, Kim Shemitzchadshin Lahem Hashanah, when they start their year anew. That's, we call that New Year's Day. The eighth day following Nittel, that was a holiday for them, still is. New Year's, we call it New Year's Day here. You're allowed to do this or not. So the Sunas Hadeshin says, yes, you have to be careful. You shouldn't do it on that day. You should do it a couple of days before, whatever the terrace is. But that's the earliest reference that I was able to come up with, and maybe there are others, to the nickname Nittel. 8 days from Nittel, so Nittel is December the 25th. So what people call Kasmir, Chesmas, Christmas Day, whatever, so 8 days from there is Mishchadshim Lohem Hashanah, it's a new year. So there's a reference to Nittel. It doesn't exactly say what that name comes from. It's again, in Shumas Hadeshim, it's probably not a Yiddish word. Originally spelled, notice how it's spelled there, it's Nun Yud Haf Lamed. In the Smag, Sefer Mitzvot Gadol, also again from the days of the Rishonim, so he mentions also, he refers to this mission in Avodah Zarah, and goes over some of the dinim. Let's see if they printed the whole source. Somewhere in this source, maybe in the next paragraph, it also makes reference to Nittel. Oh, there it is, on the fourth line towards the end. Pirush Rabbi Shmuel B'Shem Rashi, Dafka Nittel. You see it, the fourth line in the middle of the line. Nittel spelled a little differently. Shmuel Sabashmi spelled it Nun Yud Taf Lamed. Here the Smag may spell it Nun Yud Teslam, and Nittel the Kisach. Kisach is somehow a nickname for Easter, but that's for a different shiur. But looking there, it spells Nittel with a Tes, Nun Yud Teslam. That's what it's referring to. Again, where exactly the name comes from is unclear, but here we have two of the Rishonim, Shumas Hadeshim, and the Smag referring to Nittel, one spelling with a top, one spelling with a Tes, but that apparently was the old nickname for this evening, for December 25th, and for the non-Jewish holiday on that day. The Hagos Maimonios in source number 5 is commenting on the Rambam and Hilchos Avodah Zarah. It's Parakes Os Beis Hagos Maimonios. This is the uncensored version. I should take a moment to mention that whenever you're dealing with these types of subjects, and you look in the works of the Gemara and the works of the Rishonim, you have to be careful because certain things were censored. As we know, when the printing press was first invented, so the church was very nervous because now it was possible for people to print things and publish things. Later people did. They were right to be nervous. And therefore, for a while, the church exercised very, very strong control on what could and what could not be printed. And the Jews who wanted to print our Sifrei Kodesh, we had to be very concerned not to print anything that could possibly be taken as offensive by the censors, because then the Jews would get into trouble. They wouldn't let them print it anyway. So there are things in the Gemara, even, that have been altered. There are passages in the Gemara about the trial, not that much, but a little bit about the Yeshua, about Oso Yeshua, about Jesus, that's in the Gemara, that doesn't appear in the standard edition of Gemara Pesachim and Gemara Sanhedrin. It doesn't appear in the standard editions of the Shas, because it was taken out by the censor. Now they've published companion works, so now the Ozer Hadar Talmud is putting this in and to the back, or other editions of the Gemara have it, but it was censored out of Gemara. It has something in the writings of Rishonim. I mentioned to my students, most of the people here will remember that before they had nice Slichus books that we have with an English translation, you can open up and with the English and it's very easy to follow, the little white pamphlet. Everyone remembers the little white pamphlet. You have to switch back and forth. You can barely see it. And any time there's a word that appeared on another page, you have to turn back to the other page. It's just impossible. I have an edition at home which was printed originally, I think, in Russia. I got it here in America. There's a photo offset of it. So it says there are a number of slichas which complain about the suffering of the Jewish people. We know many of the slichas have that as a theme. So there is a disclaimer on the front page of this white slichas. I forgot what it's, Kamina Glinta, Kamina Poland, I forgot which one, I think Kamina Glinta. There's a disclaimer that says, these piyutim were written many, many years ago when the Jews suffered. Here in Russia, we're delighted to live here. We're thrilled. Everything's wonderful. Nobody should look at this and think we're complaining about the present government. These were written, we say this because an old tradition goes back hundreds of years. And on every page where there is such a piyut that has to do with an asterisk, and on the bottom it says, refer back to this time on page one. The Jews were always nervous about printing certain things. So we have things in the Gemara that were taken out, things in the Rishonim that were taken out. Many times in the Gemara speaks about Kusim. There were really people called Kusim. That's in Nevi'im. In Nevi'im Rishonim, we speak about Kusim, people that occupied, that came into Eretz Yisrael when the 10 tribes were thrown out. So other people came in, as described in Navi. And so there was the whole question, did they convert? They converted, but it may not have been a sincere conversion. There was a whole debate. Was it a sincere conversion? Not a sincere conversion. Discussions in the Gemara about it. Eventually they found they continued to worship Avodah Zarah, so we discounted them. But many times they used the word Kusim. Really, they mean the early Christians. The whole issue of Minim. Here in the Yeshiva was studying Brachas, and the fourth parak of Brachas describes the Birchas HaMinim that we call the Lamal Shinim, right? So who are the Minim exactly? Possibly the early Christians, etc. So you have to be careful when studying these things. Anyway, in the regular editions of the Rambam, this passage or part of this passage does not appear, but in the so-called Frankel edition, of Shamsi Frankel's edition, it does. It says there, Kishmul Dhamma Begola Ain Asr Elayom Eidam Dulvad. Outside of Eretz Yisrael, even though we read in the Mishnah that he's supposed to avoid contact and business with the non-Jews 3 days before their festival, but the Ragosman writes in the name of the Gemara that outside of Eretz Yisrael, only on the day itself, Elayom Eidam Dulvad. The Kirshish Ramashim Rashi, the Haina Dafkir, Nitol Veketzah. Again, that's Christmas and Easter. Nitol, again, spelled with a Kaf. And now the Ragosman writes, and this does not appear in the regular edition, it says, Vishvil Hatoloi Ashmo. He who was hanged. He was crucified. It's a form of hanging. So it looks for that, if the word nito spelled with a tof, nun yud tof lamid, maybe it's related to the word tolei, the one who, you know, was hung up, was crucified. That's what it looks like from the, Hagaz Mamonios. In the Talmid Ben Yon in source 6, they weren't able to print out some of the sources, but I have this form here. So I'll just read the Talmid Ben Yon in Avodah Zarah of Zion. Raises the question, if it's an open mission, you're not allowed to do business with non-Jews, so what about the fact that we're not so miserable in that today? So he says there's a difference between certain holidays. Again, he mentions Nitzel, spelled with a Tov, She'ikron Bishul Yeshu HaNotzer. So the Talmid Ben Yona, actually, this is the edition that I have at home, I assume it's the standard edition, actually mentions Yeshu HaNotzer by name. Okay, so according to some, Nitzel is from the Lashon Toloi, that he was hung up. If you take a look in the next source, it's a little safer called Nitzel Umorosav. Notice in that title it's spelled with a tet. That's a little safer that I have at home. Has an interesting discussion on of some of these dinim about Nitzel, and in the second section as well, some of the Jewish versions of the Agadic type literature about that period of time and the interaction between the Jews and the early Christians, Toldos Yeshu. There's a whole literature called Toldos Yeshu literature. Rabbi Eisenstein, who published some of these Otsa Vikuchim, and Otsa, a number of Otsa sources, they're now reprinted recently, also has Otsa Midrashim and Otsa Divrei Chazal, 7 or 8 or 10 even Svarim, which the people have seen over the years. I just recently reprinted the ones that were out of print for a while. So there too, he has a whole section on what they call Toldos Yeshu literature. In any event, so in this Sefer Nitzel of Orosav, he says, source number 7, Me'oz mitomit kavonos hanotzi, kavona hanotzi d'fi ha'yudim toloi o nitle. That's the name, toloi o nitle. The second line, toloi shemat liyashem lehem shu loshem oshem toloi. Rosh was sofei. Not toloi in the sense of hung up or crucified, but toloi in the sense of sofei. He called over Shaino Askamas called the Olam and so on. Not everybody agrees to this. He started a whole different religion. He made a suffix and he messed things up. That's what it looks like they're saying. Emunas Yeshu Umachamat, that's Muhammad. Vahen Ha'umos Nikwez Emunas Hatluya. It's somehow suffix. It's not correct. It's not true. Then he mentions also that Tola may come from the word Tola, which is, Tola is a name. We have in the Chumash Tola Ufuba mentions it, but Tola also means a worm. So it may have been a derogatory type of nickname, another possibility. The source number 8, there's a sefer called Regel Yeshar, which is written by the author of the Bnei Yisosar. So in Mareches Yud, the very end of Mareches Yud, I brought it with me, they weren't able to put it on the Maamar Kamos, but he has an entry on Yeshu HaNotri, Yeshu HaNotri. So he mentions here, and it's not, you know, he also discusses what the name may come from. At the end, he writes, Ukar Shamanu Magido Emes She'ira Maishas Kama Pomim Bilel Nitiloso V'Akiroso Min Ha'olo. Nito means to be removed. He was removed from the world. Now, the truth is, I think most of the world celebrates that he was born on this day, but somehow, according to this approach, Nito, he was, I guess he was destined to be removed from the world. So is everybody. But that's the, you know, that's the interpretation of Nito here. By the way, he mentions here, we'll come back to this, Shemina Kol Yisrael Shalom Limo Torah. I guess from the Bnei Yisrael's perspective, his surroundings, Shemina Kol Yisrael, Minna Kol Yisrael, that's right, Minna Kol Yisrael Shalom Limo Torah, V'iru L'Arnosim Shalom Du Shabok Kelev V'Batayim. And people who violated this ban, and they learned that night the wild dogs came into the house. Okay, that's and I'm asking you, I've been a minig yisol tori. And he also certainly defends the practice. Right now, I'm showing you in terms of the nickname Nittle. There's an interesting collection of Minhagi Yisrael, the Sefer Minhagi Yisrael from Rabbi Sperber. Meretz Yisrael, he compiles a lot of different Minhagi and sources and so on. So one of his in volume Gimel. We'll not take the time, I guess, to read everything inside, but he also discusses many of the origins of the name Nittel. I saw someplace Nittel is Rashi Tevis, no saying Tam was Gam. That's a Talmudic expression, which means that which gives bad flavor, usually in the area of Hilchos Kashrus. Okay, no saying Tam was Gam. Anyway, the practice as I say, whatever you refer to it, apparently a practice developed not to learn on this particular night, called Nittel for whatever reason. By the way, the probable nickname Nittel, most probably, whether you spell it with a tess or a tuff, doesn't matter, it probably comes from the Latin, from like Naples, like someone was born. A neonatal unit or something. It's probably a Natalia, N-A-T-A-L-I-E, is a Latin word, meaning to give birth, so like you have a neonatal unit, or prenatal care, or whatever. So it probably comes from, most likely it comes from there. All these other interpretations are interesting, but Lamaisa probably derives from a word like that. Okay, so the question is, where is the, what about the minig not to involve himself in learning on that night? So in the source number 11, in the Sefer Nittel Morsah, tells a story, L'fi ha-goda, ha-mahar-shah, ha-yanoi b'negzeh. Mahar-shah is one of the classic commentaries in the back of the Gemara, commentary on Tosfos mostly. So it mentions over here that Maharshah followed this practice. Ha'agodah misaperet. There is a legend. Shenoed hoya Maharshah b'leil nitzol l'chashem cheshbon shel tzaka. The Maharshah on the nitzol mach didn't learn, so what are you going to do? I mean, gotta find out what to do. They didn't have, no TV. So what's the Maharshah going to do? So it said he would sit down and do a lot of the tzaka calculations. I guess he just, as the rub of the town, he distributed tzaka. So on nitzol mach, he would sit down and do a lot of the calculations. He would do the books, so to speak, in terms of tzaka. Somebody ratted him into the authorities of the chief rabbi of the town. He is nevaze. He dismisses or belittles our Messiah. The nivdam lemudam akruim ekam ledalsus anotzi agom etzaram oratua. And what's the proof? Here's a man who learns all the time, and they told the authorities, "You go to his house right now. You'll see he's not learning." This is a man who doesn't waste a minute. He learns Torah all the time, but tonight, because he wants to embarrass our Lord, he doesn't involve himself in Torah. He's Yasu Yachar of all the class, Kamal Argin, his Napolis peace only, Albeit Harabila, Kupu Rose, and Kanem Azorim. So they decided to get together, they'll pop in on the Marshal unexpectedly on that night, and let's see if it's not true. But Laila Ahi Keshonsek, Marshal, Bechasponosok, and Minago, and that night the Marshal sat down with all these Tzedakah books to figure out the Tzedakah distributions. Not follow Petra, save from Imad HaSfar. Suddenly, as you've seen there, doing the stocking work, the Sefer fell off of his shelf. So, Shehechni Sefer there, he put the Sefer back. He went back to sit down, continue his work. Then, not follow Sefer Acher, Misar Acher, then another side, a book fell off a different shelf. The Chayim Shlis is the third time, so you think there's something funny going on. Apam, some label of Arvi, Vias, a Sefer, Shnopal upon of Lord. So he picked up the Sefer to look at it, you know, to see what's going on and so on. And maybe it's Kadosh Baruch Hu was sending him a message or something, all these books suddenly falling down, and there's no earthquake and no other rational reason to explain it. So he opens up the Sefer, and as he's looking at the Sefer, who should barge in but these troublemakers are trying to get into trouble? Parts of Ashotim, I'm skipping to the end, parts of Ashotim is Delos Peso, and they thought they'd find him not learning, but it just so happened at that moment he had picked up the Sefer, he's looking at the Sefer. So he looked at them, Marashoy, he was running like he does every other night. So he said, oh, you're a bunch of fakers, you know, you're trying to rat in the rabbi, look, it's not true, he's learning anyway. And anyway, so the guy who, the Malshin got into trouble, the Marashoy was okay. So that's, you know, again, it's somewhat, I guess, a legend, but it certainly brought down, you know, that this was the practice of the Marashoy. As I read before, it says in the Sefer Regli Yisharov from the B'nai Yisosar, mentions there, Minut Kol Yisrael, Chassidish word, Minut Kol Yisrael. In more modern times, this is a sefer called Orchos Rabbeinu, which has information regarding the practice of the Stifler Gong, the Halavacha, and some the Chazanish. So in volume Aleph, I think there are now five volumes, maybe more, I think I have five volumes, but in volume Aleph, on page Kuf Sadi Gimel, it says as follows, the rabbi who wrote this book writes as follows, V'leil nito tachshin chav hei, keshavosi lilmol im morv rabbi, amarti lo shenikol hayom. And so he said, I told him that today's nipple. The Omar Lisha Eno wrote the Luma on the Tov Sefer because he said, I don't want to learn out of the Sefer tonight. We'll learn about that. Why? Because Kehayosa Hasidim lo Londin. Because the Hasidim don't learn this night. Umisatim on Mishalomi Kover Avera. And they look at someone who does learn, like I told in the beginning, the Shema Brachos, people walked out, you know, during the Divrei Torah. The Tzibur Gadol Noig Min Exad. Many people follow this meaning. And so on, so he didn't want to learn, and they mentioned the host of Marty Rebbe, they have a Ubdal is naked so sunnin. He recalled, the cycler recalled that 3 years before, Keshachosid Echad Nichnas Elov Yisol Mashu Belil Nifl, a certain chosid came over to ask him something on Nifl, my Varal Lomaid, and he saw this chosid saw the cycler was learning, the Tamal! And this chosid was stunned, what? The cycler is learning on Nifl now. The Saga of Marty Rebbe is a safer, it is not for the fun of Shalom Yoda. And he told the guy, I didn't realize, I didn't know what the date was. So he pretended he didn't know what the date was. And then, so then he told me, therefore, doesn't want to learn tonight in case there's some chassid will be offended by it. However, he also said, he mentioned at the end, Hosid Mordor Rebbe Shemar Chazonish, Omar Sha'osel about the Luba Vlaza. Chazonish, who was not from a Chassidish background, said it's also to not learn on this night. And the Hikbid Al Anog and Shalomot, he was opposed to those who didn't learn. Mikol Mokom, Mordor Rebbe, again, the cycle, the person writing this statement, nonetheless, the cycle did not want to learn out of the Sefer. Ubikshani Shalahabalo, Eglalo, Mosai Lel Nitol, Kadeshali Vakom Elimut. He told me, don't, do me a favor, don't tell me the date, so next time I won't know. So the worst case will be a shogi, don't tell me the date. So that's the story with the cycle. There's a Sefer called Mitte Gabriel, a collection of songs called Mitte Gabriel, that's an excerpt by contemporary Talmud Chacham, Gabriel Tinner, and they have many, many volumes on different, all the Yom Tovim, and on Avelis, and on marriage, and on Bar Mitzvah, and Pidyon Aveilim, and so all kinds of different forms. So there's one edition on Hanukkah, and it's Hanukkah, I guess it covers from Hanukkah till Purim, basically. So anything else that's here. So the Hanukkah volume has about the Asar Vitevis, and about the Talamotar, and also has a whole section about Nittel. So he quotes over here a different Cheshbon. I'll have to come back to his Cheshbon in a moment, but he has a whole calculation that there's one night that you're not supposed to learn, and I'm not counting on the whole source, you can read it, but the Kitzur connect to Tkufas Tevis, okay, and he mentioned that this practice already existed not to learn. Tkufas Tevis is the beginning of what we call the winter season. Tkufas Tevis is the winter solstice, the beginning of that season. So apparently there was a practice already not to learn, which seems to have predated. That's what he says at the bottom. I have called them mitzvahs also isha. So that's a question. So there may have been some type of practice even before that. We mentioned the Marsha a few hundred years ago. We mentioned the Stifler, and in this generation, the previous door, the Chassam Sofer, source number 14, Chassam Sofer. Not the printed in the regular tshuvas, it's in a kovetz tshuvas siman lamed aleph, but it's also in a sefer called Igro Sofer, letters of the Chassam Sofer. V'dvar haminig shelo lo lilmod v'oso halaylo leil chagom. What's this about? Because so far we've seen that there is a practice, and we haven't exactly seen any particular reason why. So the Chassam Sofer makes a suggestion. He says, Alvar shenishalti meis malos haroma le'inyan haminig yisminig yisra talmud torah b'leil chagom, lo shamati tam mekubal b'leil. I never really heard a good reason for it, says the Chassam Sofer. Ramash Shamati Meadonim of Rabbi Nerio Lonahir. That which I heard from my Rebbe, that's of Nosan Adler. The Chassam Sofer was a Talmud of Nosan Adler. So he says, what I heard from my Rebbe of Nosson Adler is also not a correct practice. What does Nosson Adler say? So we don't have it here, but if you look in the, some of the other songs I mentioned, Minhag Yisrael, others, they quote that there's an Indian about Velus on this night. That because the birth of Yeshu generated in subsequent generations so much bloodshed, so much difficulty for the Jews, so we mark his birth with a sense of a Velus. That's what Nosson Adler and others time. The Jews are depressed on this evening because of this person. Many Jews were murdered in the name of this person. And we have, we should take a moment just to reflect on that. And Baruch Hashem, we don't suffer with that, Baruch Hashem, in our country here in the United States. But for many, many centuries, our parents, grandparents, and so on and so forth, going back generations, were victimized and killed in many cases because they were Jews, and all in the name of this person, also Ish. So you can understand why there would be Jews who would be depressed. I mean, the garden was celebrating the birth of this individual. So Jews are a little bit navelous. And therefore, Pekud Hashem Yishar V'sam Chelev, HaMotar brings a person simcha. That's why it's taka osur to learn on Tisha. One of the reasons it's also to learn on Tisha, but that's why it's also for an Avil to learn. Again, except for certain things which are more depressing in nature. So the Rav Nosson Adler and others suggested that's the same thing on this night. It's a night where Jews have a certain expression of avelus because of all the suffering that we endured in the name of the individual whose birthday is being celebrated. So that's what Nosson Adler suggests. However, Chassam Sofer himself, and it's not a bad suggestion, but nevertheless, Chassam Sofer doesn't go for it. He says, because Agam ki yesh tiyakol is a minig ol, she'osim gam tashmish, he mentions as a minig as well, that a husband and wife should avoid marital relations on that night. The Sogrim Shari Kvilo. Some communities apparently closed the mikveh that night. A woman who got to go to the mikveh, they wouldn't go that night, they'd go the next night. Kiladati minak shtusu, v'yeshim kos dara nogin ken. I think that's silly. And he says, why? Because apparently, at least in the Chassam Sofer's orbit, the minig was only the first half of the night, till chatzos. V'ilu atam adonim or v'rabi near York, kosher ma chilek ben kodom chatzos laila achaleo. Shenogim hekar achat chatzos. Apparently over there, the minute not to learn on Nitlav was only until midnight. But after midnight, you're still up. You're allowed to learn after midnight. So what's it about? So the Chassam Sofer says, on the fourth line towards the end, Aval Amirali Efsher, Nagu Kadmonenu Kain, Mishisholo Nitan Lakam Lebal Din Lachok Lesotan Lekashri. It's so that there will be no possible kitrug, no possible objection in the heavenly spheres against the behavior of the Jews. Why? That night, all of the religious Catholics, they go to church, they go to their churches in the middle of the night, like that midnight mass, and they stay up and they go pray and worship and so on. So it says, and they don't sleep and so on. So it's Hashem. So while the non-Jews are in church and they're engaged in service of God, all the Jews are home sleeping. So it's a perfect opportunity for the Sultan to say, you see the Jewish people, it's December 24th, just became December 25th. Bill, the non-Jews, they're in church and they're praying and they're worshiping. The Jews at home, they're sawing wood, right? They're sleeping in bed. Not right. So the Chassam Sofer said, and I feel a long day Torah, Rubam Kukulam, Norm Tchilas Alayla. Even the B'nai Torah, even people who learn, once it hits midnight, even many yeshiva guys, after 11 o'clock, I don't know what time next day it always ends. Somebody just told me a joke yesterday, how is the yeshiva guy like a cell phone? And they're both free after 11. How is the yeshiva guy not like a cell phone? A cell phone has a plan. The fact of the matter is, if Chassam Sofer writes that on even B'nai Torah, even B'nai Yeshiva, by Chatzos, people are going to bed. So you have people at Chatzos, all the non-Jews are up and they're all in their churches and they're all praying and all the Jews are sleeping. It doesn't look good. And therefore, says the Chassam Sofer, and I'll just paraphrase now to save some time, the practice was like this, that the Jewish people should go to sleep after Maariv, 8 o'clock after dinner, and sleep until midnight. That's this idea of not learning. Then everyone should get up at midnight, like on Shavuot. Everyone should get up at midnight and learn. That was the origin of minig, according to Chassam Sofer. It was a minig for the first part of the evening, so that everyone should sleep, rest up, and then at the same time that the non-Jews are in their churches and they're worshiping and so on, you'll have Jews who are involved in Talmud Torah, they're sitting and learning. There won't be a kitrug, there won't be any heavenly objection against Kal Yisrael. That's the suggestion of the Chassam Sofer. In the Chassidish world, others have different approaches. The same with Shmuel, Sachachov is in source 15, I mean, in one of his essays, and others speak about because of this evening is when this person was born, so there are various, and I don't pretend to understand this, but various klippas and chitzonistika forces at work on that night, and therefore, you know, learning is incompatible with that. Again, that's the Kabbalistic, and, you know, we'll take it for what it's, you know, certainly what it's worth by those who say it. Again, the Shem Shmuel and other Hasidic sources and Kabbalistic sources have this notion that somehow we don't want to contribute to the Sitra Achra and the Tumma forces in the world that are busy that night. And in the Rishperber's Rishperber's book, he quotes from one place a very fascinating legend among the Jews, so to speak, where the guy accused the Jews of saying that this was the night of Tumma, and that the neshama of this individual was dragged that night through the latrines into all the dirty places, and Tumma dicka place. Anyway, all of this is incompatible with learning, so that's another possible suggestion. How we exactly will understand that. So we have a number of suggestions. We have the idea of Avelis. We have the idea of some sofer that it's really only applies to the first half of the night, so that people will be learning at the time when the non-Jews are in church, so we'll have Jews also who are awake and also serving on Kodesh Baruch Hu to prevent any kitzurug. Then we have this idea of the different klippas and different, you know, sort of the tumadika forces. The idea of the Shem Yishmuel, it also mentions in this source, that we doctor want to, on this night, avoid any possible connection between Yeshu, also Ish, and Talmud Torah. In other words, he should be separate from the world of Torah. It's not right that on the night that we're celebrating, that people are celebrating his birthday, that we're going to involve in Talmud Torah, so some tafav is a chutz of Talmud Torah is going to be accrued to him in some way. We want to avoid any possibility of that. So we don't learn on that night so as not to give any zechus, any possible merit to that individual. The Sefer Hamat Amin, which is a collection of Minhagim, which you don't have in the sources now, it's in source number 17. I wanted to see some of the things about the clip list and whatever else. I have that from the Nitei Gavriel in source number 16. But in source number 17, I also mentioned in source number 16 the idea that Talmud Torah has to go together with Maisa. There's a connection, Liman and Maisa, and that's what he represented, the opposite. It's only what you feel in your heart that's important. Okay. In source number 17, the Sefer HaMatam is a collection in Hagen. I have a photocopy of it here. It says as follows. He mentions that Tam, the Shalom Yamar Zuchus Torah Seinu. But then there's another thing, which is probably, again, the most practical suggestion. And it also appears in the Sefer Tamim and Hagim. Some people probably have it at home. Tamim and Hagim, he mentions this as well. It says, Tam l'minesh shenimnor milumo b'leil nidl, that time in the month of Tevis, l'kishabi yorim harishonim, ha-yusorim ha-yehudim orvim aleim, u'makim osom b'alayla ha-hu. And this is historically documented. It was a bad night for the Jews. Jews got beaten up, there were pogroms on that evening, and what the Sefer Matam is saying, basically, it wasn't a good idea for Jews to be outside during that night. What basically used to happen is, you know, when God starts, they have to hang, the non-Jews had to wait till midnight for the church services to begin, midnight mass. So what did he do for 4 or 5 hours? In the wintertime, so it gets dark early, so he had several hours. So they used to have, and it was in the news a couple of years ago, they used to have these passion plays. Where passion plays, meaning, you know, the plays about the trial and the execution of Yeshu. This fellow made a movie about it, Gibson made a movie about it, so the whole poem, you know, a couple of years ago, in terms of the Jewish response to it. But this is based on, the tradition. They used to have in many, many communities these passion plays. And, people afterwards would have drinks and maybe some more drinks, and they would be riled up by some of the stuff that they saw in this play, where the Jews, of course, were blamed very often for the crucifixion of Oso Ish. And so people combine that with a few too many drinks, and you had people who went around, they blamed the Jews, they beat up the Jews. It's historically documented that evening was a scary evening to Jews. And therefore the Sefer Matamim and the Talmud Menhagim and others say from earlier sources that the Jews said, you know, this is a night to stay indoors. It was simply unsafe to be out in the streets. The Jew wandering out in the streets. And that also explains why the mikvahs were closed. They didn't want women out on the streets going to the mikvah on that night in case, you know, a couple of marauding guys would be marching along and they would do whatever they would do. So from a purely practical perspective, it became the practice. Now, people didn't have lights and there were no electric lights. So really the Batei Medrash where people used to learn, but the Beis HaMedrash was closed. That's what we mentioned in some of the earlier sources. They had to close the doors of the Batei Medrash. So it was difficult for people to learn at home. You didn't have your chavrusa, you didn't have sarum like today. Okay, so stay home, you can learn at home. But in that days it wasn't possible, so therefore it really wasn't possible to learn on that evening. Because it was, no one would go out in the streets. They didn't want people in the shul, the Beis Medrash. You can imagine, if the shul, the Beis Medrash was full of people learning, so it would be almost an invitation to be asking for it, right? Yeah, to be asking for an attack almost, in some places. So therefore they simply, let's lay low for the night, and people stayed home. And again, the same thing with closing up the mikvah, so that the women wouldn't have to be walking around the streets by themselves. So this is the suggestion that is mentioned in the Sefer HaMatamim. And as I say, it's probably quoted by others also, and this will explain why the practice does not exist in, for example, in Sephardic communities, right? Where they didn't have these kinds of concerns. So we'll see about their truths in a moment. But in any event, all these other suggestions are certainly creative and interesting suggestions as to why, as to why there's no Talmud this night, but most likely at least has originated with some of these other practices, with these practical facts on the ground, namely that it was dangerous. The concept of, in terms of Hukos Nida and some Sarm, particularly Sarm with the Siddush of Bentuah, speak about this meaning of avoiding Tashmish Amit, avoiding marital relations on this night. There's a sefer called Gufei Halachas, I refer to it in source for number 19. Gufei Halachas is sort of like a Mishnah Berurah style work on Hukos Nida. So in the source that I mentioned here, he has a long paragraph summarizing some of the Ma'amakomas that we went through over here, and he mentions that he once spoke with Rav Echad Kipper Lishahelo Beinan Zem Medubim for Kedush Monach Rashi Lahag Adam Misafna Shlita, the previous Safna Rebbe, and he asked him Shalom Lahatir Lel Tila Belel Nitzel Veshiva Dalal, and he asked, this is in modern times, and he asked the Safna Rebbe whether it's permissible to have a Tila on Nitzel Lach, and he said you shouldn't. And they said, what about after Chatzos? Because the whole minute in trouble was before Chatzos. So he says, well, we don't necessarily have to close the Batei Tefillah, but if somebody asks, we should avoid it. So again, in contemporary times, it was taken seriously. The contemporary posek, Rabbi Shmuel Alevi Vosner, source number 20, this is the Shira Shevet Alev and Hilchos Nida. Again, he's a contemporary Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael, I think of the name Brak. So he writes in his Sefer on Hilchos Nida, in the Tzimt Kuf Tzadi Ches, Kuf Tzadi Gimel, Sif Beis, I may have marked down the wrong Mar Mokom, but read it in a second, Tzimt Kuf Tzadi Gimel, Sif Beis, he also brings the practice, I'm sorry I can't find it now, but he also mentions Issa B'Leil Nittel, Rabbi Sternbach, also contemporary Talmud Chacham, and I saw Mr. Sternbach, and the Sefer Tshuvas von Hugglis was asked, he lives in Eretz Yisrael, but he used to sort of shuttle back and forth to South Africa. And so he's the Rav in Johannesburg. He lives in Eretz Yisrael, but he would go back. I don't think he still does. But at one time he spent the half the year in Johannesburg. So his Tshuvas von Hugglis, that's what the name of the Sefer is, Simon Tov Kuf Nun Aleph, talks about Lil Nel Nitzel Limud Torah. So he says, Anshe Litzel Kan Lo Shomus Ata Limud Lel Nitzel. He's writing in Johannesburg. The people from the Lipkisha background have never heard of this practice. However, it's accepted practice among the Chassidim. And he speaks about the Tumah and about the Klippas. There's a reference on the other side, the Baal Shem Tov says this was a night that many unsavory people were born and so on. But he says, he says, perhaps the practice never took root here in Johannesburg, South Africa, not to learn on this night. So Abraham was shamus. They shouldn't turn the practice around. He mentions Ulai Gam Latama Minav Nekar Ikar Inim Rak Lekdoshim Shemiskanim Taroso. Could be that it's only for people who are very, 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 very strong in their beliefs. And he suggests it's possible that among the non-Jews, perhaps the people aren't so. Do all the non-Jews around here go to midnight mass? Probably not. It's probably not as, they're very observant to Catholics, I guess, do. But many, many people who observe December the 25th, I think probably don't participate in midnight mass. I don't know, I never took a survey around here. But Rosh Sturmer suggesting that even among the non-Jews, what they do that evening is not, I remember myself not that long ago, And sometimes it happens that Hanukkah comes around the same time as, you know, December 24th, 25th. Next year will be like that, depends on the calendar. So I remember it was how to get my kids Hanukkah presents, you know, another question whether it's a good idea or not, but, you know, I don't want to start up with my children. So I went down, I figured it was December 24th. And I went, I live in Teaneck, and out on Route 4 there's a Toys R Us. So I went to Toys R Us, about 4 or 5 years, I went to Toys R Us, and I thought I had a great car. I'll go December 24th around 7 o'clock. Nobody's going to be there. I mean, you know, I figured all the non-Jews are home, you know, getting ready for the holiday, whatever it was. So I figured it's a perfect time to go in and out, get the presents quickly. I met there, the place was packed. In the middle of the computers went down. So all the kids, I was there for like 2 hours. You know, I couldn't believe it. I thought, you know, somehow I just assumed that on their holidays, to the holidays beginning, so by then all the gifts are bought and everything's taken care of. I guess they're looking for last minute bargains. But I was very stunned to see that. But that's what the Moshe Stomach writes in his tshuva. There's a lengthy tshuva that I printed here in source 22 from Rav Avadia Yosef, where he discusses again, and Kedarko Makodesh quotes many sources on the subject. He can't write it, of course, the Sfardim never had this practice. Sfardim didn't live among Christians for the most part. So it wasn't their issue, and he says certainly people should learn and shouldn't follow these practices. He mentions again some of the, again it's a nice summary, as always, it's a nice summary of some of the practices and the sources that we mentioned. But he says that the Zman Hazeh, certainly it's not the same problem. Certainly among the Sfardim, the practice never took root, and he says in Eretz Yisrael they never had it. So he's pretty makeful about it. There's a very interesting thing, another interesting source, which I want to mention because it'll lead us into a different discussion, just in terms of some of the final details on this practice. There is a statement of Shulchan Aruch. A lot of people are not aware of this, but in Orach Chaim Siman Tov Kuf Pei, that's source number 23, there's a list of days on which certain pious people fast. They're not talking about the regular Taniyot like we had last week, Asar B'Tavis, that everybody fasts. Certain day, Tanis Tzadikim, because of different things that happen. So if you look at the first one, Ve'echad V'nisan Meisu B'nei Aaron. So some people are Mizmatsurabo, Meisu Miriam, Nistalek Adair, Ve'chafa, Bo Meisu Yeshua. But you know, certain days, the different things happen, different people die, the different things happen. So people who want to be stringent upon themselves, so they take certain Tzadikim. I don't know anybody who passed on any of these days, but it is brought down in the Shulchan Aruch. Towards the end, look at the third to last line, towards the end of the line, talking about the Shmona of the Tevis. On the 8th of Tevis, Nichtava HaTorah Yevonis. That's the day on which the Torah, the Septuagint, the Torah was translated into Greek. And it says, Bimei Talmai HaMelech, the name of Talmai HaMelech is Ptolemy. There were a lot of Ptolemies. This is Ptolemy II. I think he was called Ptolemy in Philadelphia. Ptolemy II was after the days of Alexander the Great. The Greek Empire split into originally three and then into two parts. So one was based in Egypt, one was based in Syria. That's why, you know, the Hanukkah, I mean, when I was a kid, I was always mixed up. Who was the enemy in Hanukkah? Was it the Syrians, the Greeks, the Syrian Greeks, the Greek Syrians? What the Syrians got to do with the Greeks? I never understood it. Now, the truth is, it was the Greek Empire was based in Syria, the Syrian branch of the Greek Empire. The Egyptian branch of the Greek Empire, so a lot of the kings were called Ptolemies. So Ptolemy II was one of commissioned or got the 70 Talmidei Chachamim together. You all know the story in the Gemara, that they put them in 70 different rooms. They all came out the exact same translation. Even certain things they altered, covered, and other things, they were nervous, they altered certain things. All, Min HaShamayim, they all came out with the exact translation. I once heard that Rav Hutton, Zichron Lebracha, Rashid Chaim Berlin said, you think that was a nest? It would have been a bigger nest, and they were all in the same room, and it would have come out the same thing. The Gemara says that they were all in these different rooms, and they came out with this translation, and they said, Olam Shosha Yamim. That was a bad thing, because it legitimized the Greek language, and it led to the Hellenizers that eventually, you know, caused the trouble that resulted in all the bad decrees in the days of Hanukkah. Okay, so that was the 8th of Tevis. Then it says, Uvetesvo, lo noda eza hi atzora shirabo. There's a minute to fast on the 9th of Tevis, but we don't know what reason. That's what Mechaber writes, we don't know what reason. And then it goes on to other ones. What if we don't know what reason? The Mogen Avram writes, in number 24, Uvetesvichos shalonu isa shemes ezra sofer. Remember we said the Slichos last Wednesday. He mentions there that this was the yard type of Ezra. That's what the Taz also, Taz, what do we mean lo noda? Top the next page. Tema gedola. Ha isa the Slichos shal yud betevis. the Betesbo makes Ezra Sofer. Tzarech Iyun Rav. What do you mean Mechabit? We don't know what happened after. We don't know what happened after the day Ezra died. You know, I mean, the Magen Avraham the Taz knew it, probably the Mechabit knew it too, and maybe the Mechabit said that's not the reason for the fast. Rosh Hashulchan writes, and from the Sugar, Rosh Hashulchan writes that the reason was forgotten and then remembered later. Very, very difficult what exactly happened on the 9th of Tavis. Those, yeah. Was that on the 9th of Tavis? Could be. Okay, I see. Oh, Zaptes. Okay. That was a Shabbat. Could be. I don't know. I never saw that suggestion. Those who are interested in that particular subject, Professor Lyman, Professor Schneer Lyman, has a fascinating article about the 9th of Fast, the 9th of Tavis. It was printed in the Jewish Quarterly Review a few years ago. It's available. It's called The Scroll of Fast, the 9th of Tavis. Very, very fascinating. And it really connects our subject a little bit. A lot of stuff about also Ish and the early Christians and definitely the early Christians. It's a very fascinating article. Like all of his articles are very fascinating. This is a very, very interesting essay. But anyway, so what happened on the 9th of Tavis? So we don't know exactly what happened. The Mechaber didn't make it up. There is a book, I have a copy of it here, called Megillus Pinus. Most of you are familiar with it. Megillus Pinus is a collection, probably, very likely, the first piece of Torah Shebal Peh to be committed to writing, before the Mishnayos. Megillus Pinus was a list of days on which it was usher to fast, because of some positive thing that happened, connected somehow to the Beis HaMikdash. And it goes through every month what happened. They repaired the mizbeach, they fixed something on the floor. These are mini Yom Tovim. You know, they're not a lot of fasting these days. The contemporary parallel would be no tachanun. Right? These would be days when you don't miss tachanun. So they have it with Megillus Pinus. As a matter of fact, Hanukkah, you know, the Gemara in Shabbos, we just learned over Hanukkah, the Gemara says, my Hanukkah, the Tanur Rabbanan, and if you look on the side of the page in the Gemara in Shabbos, I'll call Falaf Mezeh, that is a quote from Megillus Pinus. Purim is also mentioned. All the Purim's in the Bible, so he says, non-Torah, Yom Tovim, are mentioned in Megillus Pinus. So the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah that for the most part, it's brought from Megillus Pinus. For the most part, we don't observe any of these days anymore, because if all these days have to do with repairing things that have to do with the Beis HaMikdash, so what Beis HaMikdash? There's no more Beis HaMikdash. How are you celebrating? They're fixing Mizbeach. It's a joke. There's no more Mizbeach anyway. So brought from Megillus Pinus, with the exception of Hanukkah and Purim, though that's what the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah, we only observe Hanukkah and Purim. There's only remnants of Megillus Pinus. Anyway, at the very end of Megillus Pinus, there's something called Perek Yemei HaTzomos. It seems to have been added later on. The details are not important for the moment. But there is where it says all these things that I just read in the Mechaber, in our source. And there it also mentions already then, it's an earlier source. And again, it may not be, was probably not part of the original Megillus Pinus, but it's still earlier than the Mechaber. It says there, B'tisha bo, lo kasu raboseinu almahu. The Chacham didn't let us know what it was. In the footnote, there's something here called Tosfos Chadashim. So they have a whole calculation based upon the calendar, and it comes out that in the year zero, so to speak, of the secular calendar, December the 25th was the 9th of Tevez. So the Jews were knowing to fast on the 9th of Tevez as a, you know, because it was such a sorry day, the day of the birth of Oso Ish, the Jews fasted on that day. And that's, now you understand why they couldn't print in the Shulchan Aruch. I mentioned before about the censors. They're not going to print in the Shulchan Aruch because there's a minig among Jews to fast on this day because that's the day he was born. So they put in the Shulchan Aruch. The Mechaber knew very well the reason why. Not like the Magen Avraham that Taz says because Ezra Sofer died. It's because that's the Hebrew anniversary of the birth of Oso Ish. Hes, the Tevez, that year, printed over here, I can show you the whole Cheshbon, how it comes out on December 25th. Okay? Whether that's true or not, you know, one can believe it. It's certainly a possibility. But what it opens up is one last discussion, which before I conclude with that, I just want to mention the following. We mentioned before that you don't learn on Nifilat, according to those authorities that follow that practice, whatever the reasons we discuss. So what do you do? So actually, the Chavos Yoyer and others, I don't have those sources, do I? In source number 28, Nitei Gavriel, talks about the playing chess. The people play chess that night. Another source, they talk about playing kvitla, cards. I think out of Yom you hear about Jews getting together on December 24th to play cards. You couldn't learn, you know, so what else did they do? So you play chess and you play cards. There's an article on this subject by Professor Mark Shapiro of the University of Scranton. The article is called Torah Study on Christmas Eve, printed in the Journal of Jewish Thought and Philosophy, Volume 8. Those want to look it up. He has many, many marmakomas. He quotes here in a footnote, that in the Panim Chadoshos, the second of Shvat, 5757, Neretz Yisrael, this latter source also reports that there was a toilet paper shortage in Jerusalem and Bnei Brak in the days preceding Christmas Eve, since a number of Hasidim spend this night cutting toilet paper for use on the Shabbos in the coming year. And it was a pre-Christmas Eve run on the product. So people found creative ways to spend the time on that particular evening, whether it's playing chess and whatever else. Interesting, source number 29, also from the Sefer Nitzel Morozov, that on this night the Jews say Aleinu out loud. You know, there's a paragraph in Aleinu, a phrase in Aleinu, that was also censored out. Shehem Mishtachlin Lehebel Barik. And we follow him, Eliyahu Shem, now this is the door and put it back in. I'll call upon him in parentheses. When I was a kid, you know, the Siddur Shiloh that I got in the kindergarten, whatever it was, doesn't have that phrase. Now the Siddur and print it again. And on the rhyme is certainly printed in Aleinu Shem, he's tackling Lehevel Barik, and we follow him, Eliyahu Yoshia. Lehevel Barik means to emptiness and nothingness, but Barik is the Gematria Yeshu. So some say that's the reference. The Jews say Aleinu, a minute, but Jews to say Aleinu with more gusto on this night. Shehem Mishtachim, Lehevel Barik, a reference to Yeshu. Okay. What I wanted to conclude with, as I said before, based on that whole calculation, there's a problem with that calculation, trying to figure out whether it's true, whether or not it's true that the ninth of Tevis coincides. And this relates to the final thing I wanted to mention. You know, it really relates to the fact that we started the same Talamot on December 4th, another Shia one time, and we'll talk about that. You know, what's magic? Another date on the non-Jewish calendar that impacts, the secular calendar, solar calendar, impacts our behavior. But there was a change in the calendar. When the non-Jewish world went over from the Julian calendar to what today is the Gregorian calendar, so that was in 1582. Without going into many details right now, the Pope at that time, his name was Gregory, hence the Gregorian calendar, made a change in the calendar. It had to do with Easter, had to do with their holidays. Basically, he chopped 10 days out of the calendar year. That year, it was announced, 1582, it was October 4th, 1582. It was announced that it was a Thursday. It was announced that tomorrow will be Friday, October 15th. You simply chop 10 days out of the calendar. And I told my students what you did if you had a doctor's appointment on the 11th. But the 11th is they took 10 days out of the 10 days out of the calendar. How could the peasants who didn't understand, it's on record in history, the peasants didn't understand, they revolted. They said the Pope was taking 10 days out of our lives. They didn't understand. But you altered the calendar. So that's how Talamotar, without going into details right now, if you look in the Beis Yosef, which was written before 1582, it says in the Siman, I think it's Kuf Yud Zayin and Orach Chaim, that speaks about when you start Talamotar, the Beis Yosef writes on the Chav Beis in November. Nun Aleph spells out November. That's what it says, printed in the Beis Yosef. Take a look. Because he chopped out 10 days, that goes back further. Another discussion. But the issue that relates to us is the following. That was done by the Pope. Not all the Christians accepted that. Only those who were Meshubit to the Pope, only those who followed the Pope. As a matter of fact, so right away, I think in Italy and France, the Catholic countries accepted it right away. The American colonies and the British didn't accept it until 1750. They continued to go by the Julian calendar. The Russians didn't make the change until 1917 for the Communist Revolution. That's why you asked them a trivia question, what month was the October Revolution? And the answer is November. Because the rest of the world, it was already November, but they were still on the old calendar. So, the idea is as follows, and I never understood as a kid either. Sometimes we get in the mail this time of year a calendar from the bank, a bank calendar. So, you know, December 25th, it says on the calendar, Christmas Day. Then suddenly, January 6th, it says Orthodox Christmas. So I thought, I'm an Orthodox Jew. I didn't know we had any observances. So what's going on, right? And then 8 days after that was Orthodox New Year's. You know, what's going on? The answer is the Orthodox Church, the Greek Orthodox Church and the Russian Orthodox Church, they didn't accept that change, because that was a favor, so to speak, from the Pope, but that was not accepted in the other circles. So there's a question, and indeed, and you find in the writings of the Bnei Yisrael and others, or the Munkacher of Idarkei Chaim B'Sholom, from the Minchas Elozer, he has the practice in Tav Hei, that they observe this on the minute not to learn on Nichol Naft is not December 24th at night, it's January 6th at night. Because those of us who didn't live in that part of Eastern Europe, well, they never accepted. So actually, they're two, I think, they're two different traditions. Not everybody does it. Not those who withhold, abstain from learning on Nichol Naft don't always do it tomorrow night. Some people are probably not going to learn either night. You'll say, Lechol Adeya. Maybe some people don't learn any night. They're utter not to learn that midnight. In any event, these are some of the, there's much more to say about the subject. It's a very interesting subject, but Lamaisa, just to summarize very, very quickly, so the very name Nipple itself, we have a number of creative suggestions, probably comes from the Latin word that has to do with the birth, or the word meaning birth. Different traditions not to learn on this night, it has to do with Tumah, it has to do with not giving him any Zuchus of our Talmud Torah, it has to do with separating him from Talmud Torah, or it has to do, like Sam Soker said, with the fact that we don't want to be involved in sleeping while the non-Jews are learning, so we sleep the first half of the night, we learn the second half of the night, or as the Sefer Matam said, it was simply a practical concern because of danger, and people involve themselves in other activities that evening, and then the only question remaining was, you know, in terms of the calendar, and that's only two different practices as to where the Chassidim come from, which nation they came from, as to whether they observed this on the night of December 24th or the night of January 6th. Thank you for listening. Have a good day.